You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Monday morning. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is, don't turn me down. It's going to go way off. We got a big show. This is our lead NBA analyst.
Oh,
Nick,
I got
not sure what
now.
Your middle name is. Right. What is your middle name?
Jenna, you're missing.
It's good to have you guys back. Yeah. It's good for me to be back. You guys have been here.
Yeah, way to blame it on
us.
I know. Welcome back to the show, both of you. Big show today after a great weekend in the NBA. LeBron chimed in on the whole Magic Johnson debacle. The Raptors took back home court advantage from the 76ers, but we are going to start out west. Hey, we said that Houston couldn't go down 0-3 to the Warriors, right? That would all but end their playoff run, and clearly they took our advice. It took overtime, but James Harden and the Rockets went out and beat the Warriors as they had planned. Harden, whose eyes were both still visibly red after getting aggressively poked in game two, dropped 41, including 13 points in the fourth quarter and overtime. It's 2-1 Warriors now. We got ourselves a series. All right, Nick, I'm going to start with you. How did they do it? How did the Rockets win game three?
All right, I'll start with the positive. Start with the things people did well instead of the things people did poorly. It's Monday morning. Start the week off on a good note.
Sure.
The Rockets were brilliant defensively once again.
Yes.
Now, I know you might see, wait, the Warriors scored how many points? How could you say 121 points? 112 in regulation. And when the Warriors have single-digit turnovers and you hold them under 120, when Durant goes for 40-plus, when Iggy and Draymond once again combine for 30-plus, and you hold them to a reasonable amount of points, I think the Rockets were spectacular defensively because they stuck to their game plan. And the game plan has been, we're going to trust P.J. Tucker, more on him later, to guard Kevin Durant, and we're not going to allow Steph and Klay to beat us. We're going to try to make sure P.J. doesn't get switched off Durant as much as possible, and we're going to deal with it. They also didn't panic. They left Clint Capella in the starting lineup. They let Clint Capella play
big
minutes.
Didn't overreact.
And he earned his minutes. He played as well. Certainly the best game he's played in this series, even if it's a tough matchup for him. And Harden was great in the first three quarters, struggled in the fourth, and then was great again in overtime. So that's the positives. The other way the Rockets won is Steph Curry was miserable. Steph Curry was terrible. You cannot just blame it on the hand. It wasn't just the missed dunk at the end. Going into the missed dunk at the end, he was 2 of 7 at the rim. The hand had nothing to do with him on a critical fourth quarter possession. Seeing Austin Rivers get the basketball, and then just deciding, I'm going to turn and run the other way, and Austin Rivers hitting a three. This was as bad as we've seen Steph play, aside from a couple really rough NBA Finals games. So the Harden does his thing. Eric Gordon goes off. The Rockets execute their game plan defensively, and Steph is awful. That's how the Rockets gave us the chance of getting a series with a win tonight.
Yeah, they were able to keep the second chance points down. Didn't give them a lot of rebounding. The Rockets in this game, to me, they were trying to find themselves. And I think you used a great word. They had patience. They didn't panic. Because there was an opportunity there where, oh, man, this is going to end like last year's game did, especially when they went through the drought offensively. But if you look at the Capella did not panic with that. He got had a great game out of him for what they want him to do. And Shumpert off the bench was able to give them some minutes.
Couple shots,
and some,
man.
Those three-pointers, I mean, they weren't expecting that. But collectively, this to me was an organizational win because they're the only team in the NBA that really has real confidence going against Golden State. And you're down 2-0. You're coming back to your place. Tight game going back and forth. The Warriors and Kevin Durant are playing well enough that you feel like, man, they're going to hit a shot. Steph and them, Clay and them are going to hit a shot at the end. But their overall game plan as far as Clay and Steph has been brilliant, and it's allowed them to be able to get back into this series.
Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green can't be the second best player on your team when you have Steph Curry on the team. When Kevin Durant goes for 46 and you don't win, you have to ask yourself, where are the rest of the Warriors that we've been lauding this entire season? This is the moment that the Warriors team was put together for.
And listen, there's no getting around how poorly Steph played. In the fourth quarter in overtime, he was 0-for-6 with 0 rebounds, 0 assists, a couple awful defensive plays, and 4 personal fouls. That's awful. When Durant brought him back, the Warriors were given a gift in that, I don't think it was a bad call, but P.J. Tucker picked up, this was, I think, missed in the broadcast to a degree. P.J. Tucker picked up his 4th foul a minute and a half into the third quarter. He then didn't come back in the game until 2 minutes into the fourth quarter. So in that 12-minute stretch, Kevin Durant scored 24 points. In that 12-minute stretch, Kevin Durant was out there the entire time, and Kevin Durant got the Warriors from down double digits.
Yeah, they ran their offense through him.
They ran everything through him, and the Rockets had no answer. P.J. Tucker is going to be first-team All-NBA defense this year. He is right now playing like, all things considered, the second most important player on the Rockets, ahead of Chris Paul, ahead of Eric Gordon, because of what he's doing, not only defensively, but on the boards. You mentioned not giving the Warriors second chance points. The Rockets had 17 offensive rebounds themselves. So many of those were 6-4 P.J. Tucker coming in, fighting his way in and getting them. So he got in foul trouble, and that's what let the Warriors come back in the game. If Steph just has a mediocre game, the series is over. If Steph just has an average game, they are up 3-0, and tonight's game is pretty meaningless. He had as bad of a game as you can have, up to and including the laughable missed dunk, which could have cut it to 3 late. And that was, the game wasn't over there. If he makes that dunk, it's a 3-point game with 20 seconds left. You're alive. And now they have to regroup for game 4 tonight.
And that's one reason why Steph has been able to avoid a lot of criticism, because there's been finals where he had 2 or 3 average to poor games. But he had Kevin Durant. He had Draymond. He had Klay. Like, these guys came to the rescue. That was really the only difference in game number 3. They didn't have anyone else to bail him out. So now you're really looking at Steph, and as Nick pointed out, it was his worst playoff game at the worst time, because now, I mean, this series can go either way. Game number 4 in Houston tonight. It's going to be exciting to see what kind of adjustments Houston's going to make in game number 4, because I still believe that there are a couple adjustments that they feel like they can make as the series continues to go on. Yes.
Listen, the Rockets played incredible ball, and it took overtime to win game 3. The Warriors did not play incredible ball. Some of their stars, besides Kevin Durant, played far under what their ceiling is. You know that they've got another gear. How do the Rockets compete in game 4?
Well, listen, we talked about it for game 3, and it didn't happen. They were able to win it anyway. Is Chris Paul going to have a big game
it's
in this
It's Chris Paul's time.
Yeah, is Chris Paul going to, because you can't rely on Eric Gordon's 30 points and 7 of 14 from 3. Now, Eric Gordon's been their second most reliable offensive player this postseason, but you can't say he's going to give you 30 again. You also, those Iman Shumpert threes, especially the off-the-dribble pull-up three, that isn't found money. That might be stolen money. Like, that is not duplicable. So they need Chris Paul. I mean, you look at it, you're like, okay, 14 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, only 8 field goal attempts. He was the one who they called his number for the final play of regulation, and he couldn't even get a shot up. They are going to need Chris Paul to show up in large order tonight, because you can't expect Steph, even if he's not going to have a great game, Steph is not going to have one of the 2 worst playoff games of his career in back-to-back nights.
Well, as much as we respect the Rockets, we could say James Harden, we could say Chris Paul, we could say Capella. They need some bench help. Jenna, the Warriors are so good. They need some help. That's what the Rockets, they need the Warriors to be able to help them out. They need Klay to have a bad night. They need Steph to be a little bit off. They need KD to come back to normal regular season KD, not postseason KD. And they still got to take some chances. You still got to leave Iguodala wide open and force him to be able to make those shots. But as well as the Rockets are at played in game number three, they still need some help from the Warriors, I believe, to get it to 2-2.
One last note, because Steve Kerr said there's a chance that Boogie, if they advance, comes back at some point this postseason. Not this series, but this postseason. I think that's really unlikely, but as far as Boogie's impact on this series, the Rockets were one of the teams, I believe, that was not afraid of the Warriors with Boogie. That didn't think that would make them better. Watching this series and watching how they have no punch off the bench whatsoever, watching how the offense goes to die when it's not that starting five out there, they're missing Boogie Cousins because they would have a sixth legitimate player. Once again, in the, you look at Saturday night's game, and it's like, wait, what did the bench do? You got two from Looney, two from McKinney, three from Livingston, and that's it. Jonas Jerebko's getting minutes and just getting run off the court. The Warriors have right now their starting five, and that's all they've got.
All right, game four from Houston tonight. We shall see. Coming up, is Kawhi Leonard the best player so far this postseason? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the show. We'll get to Raptors Sixers in just a second. But first, Nuggets Blazers, Jamal Murray.
Horse shot.
Over the backboard, circus shot while falling out of bounds.
Now, you would think after the four overtime game, this is the first 2 points of the game. So I said, okay, we're going to change our fortune after losing the four overtime game. All right. And they did.
I said horse shot.
Not sure what that was.
Yeah,
old,
he had an amazing
nervous.
Old Larry Bird shot. And then it was illegal. Now it's legal again. Over
yeah,
the top
that is
of the
right.
backboard.
Yep.
All right, more from Murray. Gets to the rack, dunks on two Blazers.
This was a obviously critical win for Denver last night to not fall down 3-1 after the what has to be just soul-crushing to lose in four overtimes. First playoff team to lose in four overtimes in 50 years. Murray was spectacular.
Is Jamal Murray outplaying Dame?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Okay.
Because he was yesterday.
I might have to do a blind review. And I might.
Okay.
Rockets Warriors from Saturday. Clint Capela meeting Andre Iguodala at the rim with an incredible two-handed block.
I think this is the best block of the season.
I mean, to get it with two hands like that.
Oh, time it. Spectacular.
Iggy trying to increase his playoff lead in total dunks as he leads all players.
Mm-hmm.
Capela said, y'all trying to take me out of the starting lineup. Man, I'm telling you, Austin Rivers can't do this. That should have been a jump ball, by the way. But that is a great play. That's a great play. Capela met him.
Block of
the year. Apex.
All right, let's head to Philly. Sixers, Raptors, game four. Toronto looking to even up the series. It's easy when Kawhi Leonard plays on your team. It's also easy when Joel Embiid is sick again. Second time this series. So Kawhi dropped 39 points. The guy's averaging 38 this series. Raptors get the 101-96 win to take back home court advantage. Chris Carter, how impressive was Kawhi on Sunday?
Well, I'm so glad to see this because there was no player in the NBA last season I thought took more unfair criticism than Kawhi Leonard. And it's basically because a guy who had a spectacular reputation, very, very quiet, but because of what happened, legitimately, what happened with San Antonio, almost everyone took San Antonio's side because of their 20-year track record, yep. how they deal with players, their medical staff, stuff people don't even know. They were trying to validate. Oh, their medical staff is great for years. You don't know that. And people just absolutely took their side and did not give Kawhi the benefit of the doubt that he had a real injury. People thought that he was faking it, that he was dramatizing it to be able to force his way out. And I know Kawhi. I know the people that handle Kawhi, and I know he had a legitimate injury. I asked him several questions before the season started, and it was basically, is Kawhi healthy? And they were like, yes. And I said, what do you expect to see? And he said, go back to the first question. Is Kawhi healthy? Now, to me, he's even a more improved version. I think that he's improved in some areas. Of course, being able to shoot the three ball, but I believe he's a better playmaker at this stage. But to be able to see him go to a team like Toronto, and this is what you want to see with Kevin Durant. You don't want to see him play with no superstars. You want to see him play with some good ball players so that the superstar in him comes out. It's forced out of him.
Yep.
And that's what we're seeing with Kawhi Leonard, the best two-way player that we have in the NBA, a guy that if you want to have a chart to see, okay, let's see a player ascend. A guy who didn't come in a top five pick in the NBA lottery, but ascending the right way as far as averages every year, as far as his minutes, shooting percentages, means gradually free throw shooting percentage.
Everything.
He's always been a great defender. And now it's been, I believe, and he's been finals MVP. I believe it's all coming into play now, and that's what we're seeing in the second round series against the 76ers, Nick.
Kawhi Leonard's been the best player in these NBA playoffs, and that's no disrespect to Kevin Durant or Damian Lillard or James Harden or Giannis. What Kawhi is doing on a night-in, night-out basis, where if we were ranking players in the series, Toronto's got the first draft pick, and Philly might have the next four. Siakam's now hurt. Lowry's doing his playoff thing. Marc Gasol's not getting touches. Like, who would you take on Toronto other than Kawhi before Embiid or before Butler or even before Simmons or Harris? Like, Kawhi is doing this on his own. He played 43 minutes in this game.
Like that was a challenge, too.
I said, man, you took 22 games off for load management.
For this
so
season.
You're ready for this moment. In game three, he was pacing to play 40 minutes. It ended up being a blowout, so he didn't play the final 4 minutes of the fourth quarter. They have fallen apart when he's gone to the bench. I've seen this story before. It was called LeBron in Cleveland. And you better be ready in the playoffs, play at least 42 minutes, because your team cannot handle you off the court for 8 minutes. That was the case again yesterday. They're plus +7 in the 43 minutes he plays. They're outscored in the 5 minutes he's on the bench. For the series, that means on a net rating basis, they're averaging plus +7.5 when he's out there, minus -49 when he's not. So they are just getting annihilated every minute he's on the bench. Siakam, his second best player, injured himself, cheap shot in Joel Embiid. He was a game time decision, surprised he played, but in the box where you're like, oh, he didn't really play.
No, first field goal late in the third quarter.
Right, absolutely. I think he started 0-for-7 from the game. Kyle Lowry. We're like, oh, he had a good game for him this playoffs. 6-of-13. And for how Lowry's been playing, that's a good game. They're getting nothing from their bench. Nope. Fred VanVleet, another offer. Norman Powell, who they're paying $10 million a year the next couple of years, nothing. Serge was the only guy who gave him anything off the bench. Kawhi willed them to the win. And if it wasn't for Dame's shot to win a playoff series, that shot Kawhi hit would be the biggest shot of this postseason. 1-point game, minute left, guy in your face, step back three in your eye while playing my 43rd minute of the night. He's been spectacular. The only reason this series is tied and not 4-0 Philly is because of the individual will of Kawhi Leonard through four games. I can't speak highly enough at what he's done thus far this series.
Sure, Kawhi willed them to the win, and of course it was helped by the fact that Joel Embiid can't seem to stay healthy. If it's not an injury, he had the gastroenteritis the first time, and now maybe this is an extension of that, but he was really sick, had IV fluids again, 9 hours before tip-off of this game right here. How concerned, CeCe, should the Sixers team be about Joel Embiid?
Any franchise, their best player, if he was inconsistent, that being either by play, that being by availability and our health, it would be a huge concern. Because it's hard to run the team around a guy that you don't know if he's going to be there. And Joel Embiid, even though he might be on the court, he wasn't Joel Embiid the all-star.
No.
So now, how do I defer? Because typically they're going to run 75% of the things through him. And now these other players, when he's on the court, I don't see them. I just go back to the Brooklyn series, and I was just shocked by it. And I give Ben Simmons some credit for it. When Joel Embiid was out, he played the best game I had seen him play as
Ben
a
Simmons
pro.
Did.
Yes. So when Joel Embiid, they're going to have to get used to, a lot like when Kobe played with Shaq. Man, there are going to be some days, man, Shaq ain't going to have his best. Now, you got to be able to judge that in real time and still be able to play basketball at a high level. I don't see the Sixers. Sometimes they're confused at what they want to do. Sometimes they let Jimmy Butler run the team. Sometimes they're trying to let Ben run the team. But we know the focus is Joel Embiid. He's the best center that we have in the NBA. And when he's not 100%, it's hard for him just to try to do some of the other roles, play defense and other things that you can do and be able to fill up the stat sheet that's just not scoring the basketball, Nick.
Embiid was obviously really bad. He made two baskets in this game, and he clearly was not 100%. But what's a killer for the Sixers is, so okay, Embiid's not 100%, but Jimmy Butler was really good again. Mm-hmm. J.J. Redick was hitting his shots. This has been a tough series for Tobias Harris. Who does that leave? That leaves Ben Simmons. And Ben Simmons in this series, Ben Simmons, a guy who I have defended and supported repeatedly. First game of the series, 14-9-3, 7-of-8 from the field, but they get blown out, so it's not really impactful. Since then, 6-7-5, 10-7-7, 10-5-4. Typically, if Ben Simmons isn't scoring, he's at least getting other people involved. When you're averaging, what's the math on that? 6 assists per game? Just under, actually? 5 assists per game, what he's doing for the series? I understand that he, in theory, has been the guy guarding Kawhi, and he did a good job on Kawhi individual matchups. But Kawhi's still getting close to 40 a night, so he's not having the impact there. Like, Simmons has to be better. And he made some. We know what he can't do. But what he is supposed to be able to do is be a smart player, help you in transition. They had a 3-on-1 fast break. Mm-hmm. He had a layup. He gives the ball up for no reason whatsoever. I think to Tobias Harris, they don't get a basket out of it. He basically walked, I think it was James Ennis, into a charge on when he was running the baseline. Ben Simmons has been a killer for Philly in this series. When they, despite how great Kawhi was and despite how poorly Joel Embiid played, they could have won yesterday's game with just an average Ben Simmons game. They didn't get it.
Even in the plus-minus category, Joel Embiid, not a great game. He's plus 17. Ben Simmons, he stays under the radar as far as the criticism, but he should be getting some of that criticism. He was minus 16. Yeah. So they need Ben Simmons. And I heard someone say it on TV. I don't know who it is. I heard someone say it. They are a Ben Simmons jump shot away from being an NBA's finals basketball team. And that's a frightening feeling because Ben Simmons is that kind of player. He's that kind of athlete. But the court will open up when he learns how to shoot it in Philadelphia. Well, he's not going to learn in this playoff series. Right. But this is what I believe, and I've been saying it for a long time. Ben Simmons, he will hurt, especially when you get to the playoffs, because the defense and how teams play is totally different.
Because it's magnified that much more, and now you see it in this series. All right, time now for Put a Grade On. It's sponsored by CarMax. Last night, the aforementioned Kawhi Leonard was excellent, and the Raptors needed all 39 of his points to avoid going down 3-1. Nick, put a grade on Kawhi's performance.
A double plus. It'd have been a triple plus if he could have hit one of those free throws at the end, so he could have got his 40-piece on 20 shots.
Right.
He missed two free throws when the game's decided. He was so good on both ends, hitting tough shots. Contested mid-range twos, a contested three. It was the biggest shot of the game. He was spectacular.
He was spectacular in all aspects of the game. Rebounding the basketball, playing defense. Kawhi's a special player. And I didn't want it because he's my guy. But when you said he's been the best in the NBA playoffs, that's saying an awful lot there. You got to give him an A+.
All right, good stuff. Coming up, LeBron James chiming in on Magic Johnson's departure. Hear it from LeBron next on First Things First. Great fight for you this weekend. Undefeated champ Swift Jared Hurd puts his super welterweight title on the line as he takes on top contender Julian J-Rock Williams. That's Saturday.
J-Rock,
on
okay.
Fox and the Fox Sports app. That's what my friends used to call me back in the day. A little J-Rock. That's not actually what happened. Time for us to go viral.
No problem. No,
J-Dubs
like
is what I was called. J-Dubs.
Okay. Well, yeah, that
like that.
This might have been the best highlight in all of sports this weekend. Honestly, Ryan Shazier showing off the dance moves at his wedding. It's amazing to see how far he has come, how happy he looks. What an absolutely incredible feel-good story.
When we saw him attempt to walk across the stage at the NFL draft a couple years ago, I was really sad and I was really worried for him. Not about his football career, but about his ability just to do things like this, live a normal life, dance at your wedding. Now to see him do this, it's so great. Go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say, and then 2 weeks ago to see him do that box jump that he's actually in the gym and really getting stronger so that he could do things
and
like
this. This one got me. He's a Fort Lauderdale kid. Met him in high school, went to Ohio State and played. None of us, man, as much we compete, want to see one of our guys out there on the field where they can't help themselves. Man, this is tremendous to be able to dance at your wedding. His wife deserves that. His friends, his family deserve that. Man, and, great moment.
And from everything I've read and heard, it's obviously that woman was his fiance when this happened. And the way she has supported him, stuck by him throughout this entire process, because that's got to be traumatic and scary for the partner involved, seeing the your significant other laying prone on the field. So that's awesome. That's a beautiful wedding.
And even though it's a great story off the field, on the field, who have the Steelers missed more than anyone else? Ryan Shazier on defense. Mm-hmm. All right. Time for some stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Kawhi Leonard dominated Philly yesterday, pouring in 39 points. There were 21 ties and lead changes in this one, so Toronto needed every point. Nick, has Kawhi been the best player in the playoffs?
To me, he has been. He's not averaging quite as many points as Kevin Durant over the entirety of the playoffs, but he's doing it on an insane efficiency, 32 a game, nearly 60% from the field, 50% from three, and not to mention, while Durant's a really good defender, Kawhi's the best perimeter defender in basketball, and he's doing it with no one else playing at an all-star level on his team. To me, Kawhi's been the best guy in the postseason.
And
so
to
far.
Me, I know Kevin Durant, he's gotten a lot of the attention. I thought he's played spectacular. But, man, for far as free agency, are you better off with KD? Are you better off getting Kawhi? I think Kawhi right now is really presenting a strong case. He's been tremendous in the postseason. I believe he continues to get better.
Topic on tomorrow's show. Last night, the Nuggets were able to even up their series against Portland, two games apiece. Jamal Murray went off for 34 points, while Nikola Jokic put up a triple-double. CC, what'd you make of game four?
I think they found their superstar in Jamal Murray, and my guy Nick, he's going to keep apologizing to Jokic. How many minutes did he play in the four overtime? For all the people out there said he's
played
not in
65
shape.
Minutes.
Oh, okay,
most minutes
you.
Anyone's played.
He said,
in NBA
listen, I don't have a great
years.
Body and everything,
no,
but that doesn't mean I'm in great shape. That's what I saw with Jamal. I believe in this series, he's outplayed Dame thus far.
Jamal, in last night's game, three times at the end of the game, they foul him. If he misses any one of those free throws, the Blazers can get back in it.
Yep.
He goes 6 of 6 at the line. This, to me, feels like almost a lock that it goes 7 games. These two teams have been so evenly matched through 4 games. It's hard to see either one of them winning the next two. I feel like, much like the Nuggets' first-round series, there's going to be a Game 7 in Denver that will determine who moves on. This has been a great series throughout.
All right, moving on. The Phoenix Suns hired Monty Williams to be their next head coach. Williams was also reportedly in the running for the Lakers vacancy. Nick, with Monty out of the mix, what should the Lakers now do?
Well, they're going to hire Ty Lue, and I wouldn't be surprised if that is announced before we're on the air tomorrow. I think you could hear it today, and if not today, certainly tomorrow. Ty Lue's going to be the next head coach of the Lakers. This was the obvious choice from the beginning. The Lakers seemed to try to steer away from the obvious choice, but Monty Williams then steered towards the Phoenix Suns. So Ty Lue's going to be the answer, and I think he always was the answer.
Yeah, Ty Lue will be the answer. Great opportunity for Monty Williams. He also gets that owner there to commit to 5 years. So for a young coach getting another turn at coaching, a lot of people would say when he got fired in New Orleans, it wasn't fair. So young team, potential lottery pick. If you look at right now, potentially a team that could surprise people next year, Monty Williams and the Suns. Happy for him.
All right. Cowboys making some news this weekend regarding the status of Ezekiel Elliott's contract extension. Zeke wants an extension sooner rather than later, but COO Stephen Jones said there isn't a timetable for it yet. See, is there any reason not to sign Zeke to an extension this offseason?
No, there's not a – well, yeah, there's a reason, because you run out of money, and you don't have to. So I was going to say no, but, yeah, there are some real legitimate reasons. And those reasons being Dak Prescott, Zeke is a better player, but Dak's more important. And where they come in as far as salary for Dak, you know, it's going to affect – how they can move forward and affect Zeke and the rest of that roster. So it's not critical that they do it this year. The pressure was applied externally when Todd Gurley last year signed it. So and he signed in that period where it was unprecedented. So then it became, wow, Zeke's going to want a contract.
Todd Gurley got it at the same point of his career that Zeke's in now.
Mm-hmm.
After the third year as a first-round pick where you have essentially a five-year contract on the guy, he got his contract 3 years into his career despite having one of those years be a bad year. Zeke has not had a bad year yet. He just finished the third year of his career.
Yeah, so they don't have to do it. What happened with Todd Gurley, and now seeing Todd Gurley, is he going to be 100%? That's a message sent to Zeke and to others. If you're a running back, you better get your money because your days are numbered. We saw Isaiah Crowell with the Raiders. He already tore his Achilles this offseason. He was taking the chance to go there for a year. So in these OTAs, in these offseason workouts, you can still get hurt. So it becomes very important that the player, but Dallas and how they do things, and Jerry, sometimes they open their mouth and it puts more pressure on them because they didn't have to say anything.
Well, and this is one of the reasons that I've been so against their public comments about Dak. Because you have set yourself up to where you are going to pay Dak this offseason. And it is so hard to make the argument to Zeke and his representation. Wait, we were drafted in the same draft class. I have been clearly one of the three or four best in the league at my position. He has not been at his. You're paying him. We know they're almost assuredly going to have to pay Amari. Dak or Zeke and his representation say, he's given you 8 good games. I've given you 40 good games or 44 good games plus the playoffs. Like, how am I not getting paid? But the argument against paying him is the cautionary tale of Todd Gurley from the team's perspective, which is a guy can look like an MVP. And at that position, now I know Todd Gurley dealt with a knee injury in college, and that might be rearing its head now in the pros. But at that position, the career spans are so short. And if you're the Cowboys, the argument against paying Zeke is a financial one. So wait, we've got him for this year super cheap. We would have him for next year at the fifth-year option.
Yep.
And unlike the quarterback position, the franchise tag for running backs is a bargain.
It's a good number.
Because there's not 5 running backs making big money. So we would have him for the next 3 years, guaranteed cheaply. A fourth year if we wanted to franchise tag him a second time. That would then get expensive. But how long do we think a running back's career is? We're now talking about year 6 and into year 7. So if they hadn't already let the horse out of the barn, so to speak, since we're talking the Cowboys on we're going to pay everybody. Everybody's getting paid. We love our team. This is our core. Then I don't necessarily love how the Steelers do business always, but the Steelers wouldn't have been talking about this.
No.
The Patriots wouldn't have been talking about this. Why would we be talking about your extension when you're in your just finished year 3 and we of essentially a 5-year contract? So
right, and even though you were drafted the same year as Dak was not the first rounder, so he doesn't have that option.
Yep.
So it is important that they get him signed.
Dak's in a different position. Dak's 4-year contract's a real 4-year contract because he's not a first-round pick.
I was going to say, so just because I don't fully understand, are his hands tied? Are Zeke's hands tied as far as any other options he has if they decide to have that extra option and then to franchise tag him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing he can do. He can verbalize it, but he's just basically saying the people say, oh, we're going to give you some money. He said, oh, I just want him. I want it earlier than later. So it's the Cowboys. They help fuel this conversation.
The Cowboys, to me, have enormous leverage in this spot because all Zeke can do is not show up. And that's, under the new CBA, starting training camp, that's $32,000 a day. That racks up. And Zeke's a guy who hasn't gotten that big payday yet.
Right.
That's real money that starts racking up. And so I think they will pay Zeke. But again, like many things the Cowboys do, it's not necessarily how I would run the business.
All right, let's get back to the NBA now. It's been about a month since Magic Johnson stepped down as the Lakers president, blindsiding the entire organization, really the entire NBA. And yet mum's been the word from LeBron James. That is until now. On the most recent episode of The Shop, LeBron addressed Magic's sudden departure.
My right hand comes to me and say, Magic just stepped down. And I'm like, man, get the out of my face, you I go check my phone, I look at it, it happened. Personally for me, I came here to be a part of the Lakers organization, having a conversation with Magic. So it was just weird for him to just be like, nah, I'm out of here. And not even have no like, hey, Bron, kiss my I'm gone. It wasn't even that.
So, Nick, the morning after this news broke, remember the first thing I asked you was, what do you think LeBron's reaction was? And you said, we haven't heard from LeBron. We may not hear from LeBron. And he has been very protective about what his reaction was to all this happening. What was your reaction to what LeBron had to say?
Well, we had an inclination Magic didn't tell LeBron because of the way Magic conducted that press conference.
Yes.
The way Magic handled himself in that moment, it didn't seem like he was letting a bunch of people know. Seemed like he didn't want to let anybody know because he thought he might get talked out of it. We now know LeBron had what I think is a very natural human reaction. You got to be bleeping kidding me. And he's doing it today? We're about to play our final game of the year. We're about to finish up this season. And he didn't give, LeBron's saying, he didn't give me the courtesy of a heads up.
Yeah.
Similar, now, he didn't give Jeannie Buss that courtesy either, and we criticized him for it. But then we heard some other things about maybe Jeannie and Rob Pelinka talking bad about Magic behind his back, about Jeannie not empowering Magic the way that...
and Magic wanted to do certain things. Jeannie Buss was not going to let him do those things. So Magic deciding not to talk to her and everything, that made sense.
Especially now that we have a fuller picture. LeBron did none of those things.
None.
And what LeBron said there I find interesting, which is... one of the reasons I came to the Lakers is I had a conversation with Magic Johnson. Now, I know some people will say he was going to the Lakers no matter what. I don't believe that to be true. If Phil Jackson were in a position of power there still, he was not going to go there, right? We know that based on LeBron's bad relationship with Phil. I wonder that if it was just the Buss family with no Magic Johnson, with his, yeah, he wanted to go to L.A., but L.A.'s got a team with Doc Rivers and Jerry West. Would he have considered, if the Lakers didn't have Magic as the point person in the face of the franchise, a guy that LeBron has been compared to on and off the court more than any other player in league history, a guy that LeBron has enormous respect for, would LeBron have considered the Clippers? Would LeBron have considered waiting another year, punting free agency? We don't know. And so to not give him the respect of the phone call and the heads up, like, that was a somewhat muted reaction from LeBron. Like, really? You're not even going to call me and say, LeBron, I'm out? Like, I'm not going to get that courtesy? It was... it was disrespectful. There's no other way to put it.
It was disrespectful. It was also cowardly. If Magic Johnson's going to say, I didn't want to talk to Jeannie Buss because I worry that she would have talked me out of it, there's got to be a similar reasoning to, it's like breaking up over text. It's, yeah, sure, it's easier, but you also don't have to face anything, and you don't have to face the conversation like what you just heard LeBron say there right to your face.
Right. One of the things that I think is missing is just a general just respect from someone that played at a high level, someone that committed their life and their family to this organization. Now, Magic, I believe LeBron would have gone to the Lakers, no matter what. I believe that. I believe that Magic just happened to be there, and because of LeBron's respect for the game and for the respect that the Lakers put Magic in that position. Because I can tell you, LeBron wasn't overly impressed with Magic Johnson's basketball IQ, how he was going to put the team together. He didn't go there for that. Based on the people he had been with, David Griffin recently there in Cleveland, Pat Riley and the way they do things there in Miami. So, no. So, for me, typically, and Nick, you see when we travel around, there's such just a typical, a high level of respect from professional to professional.
100%.
And you just did not see this in the Magic Johnson. And to me, that's what he's guilty of.
And I think that's something that really bothers LeBron there, because when you say professional to professional, there's a great picture. You should tweet it out later today of last year when we were at the Nets game and I went to the back to get a drink with my wife and you were talking to JR. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the show, talking about his season, and LeBron comes over and the picture of LeBron's eyes lighting up when he sees Chris, because it is, oh, someone that I am actually, like, there is a level of, yes, athlete to athlete, but there's another level of great to great, where it's like we can connect on a level that I can't even connect to my friends with. And LeBron viewed Magic that way.
Yes.
Like, that was, we have a commonality that is, I don't even share with my closest friends. I don't share with my business partners because we've both been there. And for, you said it's like breaking up via text. No, it's like ghosting somebody. It's like, because he didn't even text. Yeah. He didn't even give him the heads up. Now, I know some people say, how's this different than what LeBron did to Dan Gilbert a decade ago? LeBron was a pending free agent. Everyone knew he was having a TV show where he was going to announce a decision. Mm-hmm. It's not like there was any feeling.
Dan Gilbert knew he wasn't coming back.
And Dan Gilbert, even if people don't want to believe that, Dan Gilbert knew he could announce that he was a free agent, he could go anywhere. It's not like there was any feeling Magic might leave after the season. That wasn't on anyone's radar. Magic might walk out the door the way he did. It appears it wasn't even on Magic's radar until a few hours before. But you called it cowardly. I'll call it, at the very least, unprofessional. You have an obligation to people you make commitments to tell them why you are breaking a commitment.
Let me ask one quick question. How much of that will become a little better when LeBron gets his coach, if he gets Ty Lue, which is expected to happen in the next 24 hours? How much does it sort of make that, what everything that, take that bad taste out of it and now sort of everything pointing forward?
The only thing going to make this go away is a big-time free agent, where they can put the product on the court that the Lakers look like the Lakers. That will make the Magic Johnson thing go away. It's not looking like they're going to hire another executive. I believe they're going to hire Ty Lue. The Lakers will be better next year. But, man, they need a big – to be able to compete with these teams we're talking about, they need an Anthony Davis. They need a Kawhi. Right. They need something like – that right there will make that all go away.
And according to all reports and what I'm hearing, LeBron and his agent Rich Paul have stayed out of the coaching decision entirely, have not chimed in. Now, they probably don't need to chime in as far as that everyone knows they would like it.
Wants,
LeBron
sure.
would like it to be Ty Lue, but he hasn't, according to reports and what I'm hearing personally, they haven't put their finger on the scales on this. But that's another element where when LeBron, I'm sure at the end of the season, thought Luke Walton's getting fired, we all thought Luke Walton's getting fired, that he and Magic would have that conversation. And then Magic goes out the door, and now he has the conversation with nobody. It's just, it's not the way you do business. And I'm not surprised at all that LeBron said, "You really? Like, he didn't even believe Randy when he told him. When Randy told him, Magic just stepped down, LeBron said, "You're messing with me," before game 82, and now he wasn't messing with him.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, what do the Rockets need to do to win game 4 tonight against the Warriors? That's ahead on First Things First. Yahoo senior NBA writer Vincent Goodwill joins us here today.
What up, Vincent?
What's going on?
How are you doing, brother?
I waver. I go back and forth on how close we are when I can call you Vincent and Vinny. But
you should talk about it more. It's interesting to the audience and
Nick,
the people at the table.
You're definitely not annoying. Let's talk Bucks
and Celtics.
Guy on
the plane told me, man, get Nick tomorrow, man.
Vinny?
He's annoying. I said, okay.
Yeah. Fact. The series has shifted to Boston. Giannis doesn't care. He was a force. Scored 32 points on the road, helping the Bucks take a 2-1 series lead. Kyrie Irving scored 29 in the losing effort. Here he is going into tonight's game 4.
This is what we all have dreamt of, just being part of something that feels like this, of being able to be in a series with a great team and go out there and make the best man win. So we'll make a few adjustments, go from there, and leave it all on the line.
All right, Vinny, what do the Celtics have to do? What are those said adjustments that he was talking about there in order to get it back into the series?
I think they don't have an answer for Giannis at all. Like, that's something you just have to concede and say, not necessarily in the Shaq realm or the Kobe realm when you just couldn't do anything with those guys, but you have to figure out we're going to take something away. They're trying to take away everything. We're trying to take away Giannis's drive, and we're trying to take away the shooters, and what happens? You wind up taking away nothing. And then their second best player, Chris Middleton, has been getting off on them for the past year. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, they have nothing for him. I think they have to make a choice. If it's going to be Giannis, you're going to beat us by scoring 40. We're going to have to take our chances with that. But since they put Nikola Mirotic in the starting lineup and just spread the floor with shooters post game one, Boston has had no answers. Offensively, it's not a problem. You're scoring 116 points. Kyrie needs to play better, but I don't think that's the bigger problem. I think the bigger problem is that they can't match up with Milwaukee's personnel.
Well, and the other problem is Boston, much like it seems like a lot of the viewing audience, is not prepared for what Milwaukee does, which is games will seem close, and then they won't. This is how they closed out the Pistons game 4. Nice little 45-10 run in a game they were trailing. Game 2, their win. They're not going to do that again where it's a 3-point game and they go on a 31-4 run. Mm-hmm. What happened in game 3? They're down 1 mid third quarter is Milwaukee. And then a 25-8 run to make it 106-90. Good night, good luck, game over. And what was Boston's reaction after the game? We didn't get a fair whistle. Nonsense. The reason Milwaukee went to the line a bunch, and until the fourth quarter, Boston didn't go to the line much at all, is that's who these teams are.
Yes.
Boston this year, second fewest free throw attempts of any team in basketball. Giannis, second most free throw attempts of any person in basketball. And when your defense is set up to where we're going to hammer him at the rim, which I think is a good strategy, he's going to get to the line. 18 free throws game 2, 22 free throws game 3. I challenge any Celtic fan to find more than two calls on Giannis they think were questionable. He went to the line because he was getting fouled. And that puts you in the bonus. And when you get in the bonus fouling Giannis, then all of a sudden a hand check on Eric Bledsoe 35 feet from the basket. That's two free throws. They don't have an answer for Giannis that doesn't involve leaving shooters wide open. And that's when you're reminded, oh, Milwaukee, the second best three-point shooting team in the league all season.
But wasn't that the Celtics' game plan in game one? Right? Isn't that how they did it in game one? It's just that the rest of the Bucks weren't shooting and now they are. Why can't they apply some semblance of that right now in order to contain Giannis?
Well, that's the problem with great teams. Everyone comes out there with a game plan, then you run into their talent and into their scheme. They changed the scheme. Vinny said that. They changed the scheme, put Mirotić into the lineup to build stretch to court. But I said after game one, Milwaukee will take the same shots that they got in game number one, and they are taking them and making them now. And Giannis is playing well. I think one of the problems, too, with the Celtics is ever since they traded for Kyrie and after they did well last year in the playoffs without Gordon and without Kyrie, everyone's always been thinking a championship. So it's either championship in Boston or bust. But the championship, really, the pedigree would be Milwaukee and how they played this season. The Celtics have been inconsistent. Milwaukee has played, and they play a style that people aren't familiar with either, Nick. This is not the Eastern Conference. They play a lot like either Houston or Golden State as far as knowing the analytics, as far as spreading the court and having shooters and having that star that can take over the game. So it's exciting to see that because we don't always see it. A team, and that's what I was worried about at the game number one, as dominant as they were during the season, the number of blowout wins that they had. Will we see this in the postseason? And now we're starting to see that.
Well, here's the thing that we've always assumed about Boston, as once they got a full roster, we said they're going to be the most talented team and the best coached team in a given Eastern Conference, right? We just naturally gave them that assumption. But if you put these two rosters together, and let's say we're picking teams on the playground, and you put the best players out there.
Okay.
You're picking Giannis first,
yep.
Then Kyrie, and maybe you pick Chris Middleton because he can play on both ends of the floor. So if you're saying you have one and a half of the two best players in the series.
And right now, not potential.
Mm-hmm.
Not what kind of player he's going to be.
Tatum's going to be. Three, or what
no, right now.
You're
right
definitely going to take Middleton, yes.
Absolutely. And I don't think it's a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the way Middleton plays on both ends of the floor, the fact that he's low maintenance, he doesn't need the entire floor to be effective the way that Kyrie does on occasion, that makes him a much more effective player in a playoff setting where it comes down to execution and maybe less about sort of scheme and just about, look, can you take this 5 feet of space that you're going to have because defenses are so tight and do something with it. Chris Middleton is made for that, and they have no answer for Giannis. And add to the fact, look, Bradley Stevens, as good of a coach as he is, does not have a decided advantage over Mike Budenholzer. He doesn't. He's a better coach probably, but there isn't that big of a gap to where Stevens can steal you a game. If he did steal him a game, it was game one. This series might be over by the middle of the week.
And this is the first series that us, I guess, aside from round one, but that was against a Victor Oladipo-less Indiana Pacers team, that Brad Stevens has gone in where if they don't win it, there's questions about Brad. If they, where there's real, even though the Bucks are the favorite in the one seed because of the expectations going into the season. 2 years ago when they made the Eastern Conference Finals, their best player was Isaiah Thomas on that team. Nobody was going to hold against them if they got knocked out in the second round. Last year, they were the two seed, but that was then Kyrie got hurt, so no one was going to hold that against them. There's real expectations now. To your question, though, Jenna, what was different about round game one to the last two? Yes, guys are hitting shots. The other difference is in game one, Giannis was trying to finish around contact. They were building that wall, and he was trying to avoid the defense and try to finish that way, and he wasn't finishing. Now he's just saying, I'll finish through contact, and if I don't make it, I'm going to get the call. And he is forcing the referee's hand by constantly attacking. He said after the game, if I get a couple charges, so be it. I am constantly putting pressure. And if you're Boston, you're like, hold on a second. This is a game where Brown and Tatum combine for 38 points on 50% shooting, and it's not enough. Mm-hmm. Kyrie has his second straight bad game. Gordon Hayward has his second straight bad game. Terry Rozier, a non-factor for a second straight game. Now you're running out of people now for this deep Boston Celtics team, and now you no longer have the home court that you stole, even if you win tonight, and I'm skeptical that they'll even do that.
Yeah, they might get Marcus Smart back tonight. That might be one of the adjustments, but I think the biggest adjustment Giannis has been doing is he's going quicker in the shot clock.
Yep.
He is not waiting for the shot clock to wind down where they can load up the defense, have six eyes on him. He is going in the first third of that shot clock, being very, very aggressive, and I look for that to continue tonight.
I wonder if Milwaukee's just figured out they're the better team.
Yeah.
When you go and steal a game three on the road, and you know that you have to win one of these two, and they're saying, you know, we're going to get game three, maybe they figured out that they're the better team at this point, even if this goes to six or seven.
Stick around. A little bit more coming up. Has Kawhi been the best player this postseason? That was a rhetorical question. He is going to be here. That's next on First Things First. One is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. Catch it all Monday through Friday only on FS1.
Be careful on Friday. Sometimes might be missing.
It's okay. You're going to be here this Friday, so don't worry about missing
a
game,
a show, or two. Well done, Jenna Wolf.
He's allowed to miss a show, Nick.
Fire.
It's okay.
Exactly right.
Back here with Vince Goodwell, Sixers, Raptors, Game 4, Toronto looking to even up the series. It's easy when Kawhi Leonard plays on your team. It is also easy when Joel Embiid is sick again. Second time this series, he played but did not contribute much. Kawhi, on the other hand, dropped 39. He's averaging 38 this series. Raptors get the 101-96 win to take back home court advantage. Vinny, how impressive was Kawhi on Sunday?
I think his impressiveness was almost based off of how non-impressive his teammates were. Like, can you name another Toronto Raptor that made an impact beyond small things on the fringes? I think Kawhi has reached the point of his career where, let's say he doesn't get any better, right? But he probably is the second or third best player in basketball right now. And that's being conservative, where you have to be on high alert every second he has the ball. There is no wasted motion. He doesn't spend a whole lot of time dribbling around the floor. He gets to where he has to get to in one or two dribbles. And even in that last three on Embiid, Embiid breathed.
Yes.
He hesitated for half a second, and next thing you know, Kawhi drilled a three in his eye. You can't even breathe on this guy. Remember last year where they said the Spurs, he might be a product of the Spurs system. Let him go. Let's see what happens when he goes somewhere else.
Yes.
And then you see that this guy exists far beyond the Spurs system. Like, if I'm the Clippers or the Knicks or the Lakers, I am at his door like the Lakers were at LeBron's door June 30th. At 11:59, you cannot afford to not take an opportunity to get this guy. He's that good.
You're absolutely right that he is looking like one of the top three players in the league. And at the moment, this postseason, he is playing like the best guy. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean seven games in a postseason does not, or nine games, I guess, now for Kawhi, because this series went five previous round, does not a career make. But this postseason, no one's been better. His efficiency. So many things. Our pal Kendrick Perkins compared his game to Michael Jordan as far as the shots he gets, where he gets them, the way he takes the mid-range shots, the way he locks in defensively. And I understand that comparison. But the box score looks like LeBron. The efficiency, the plus-minus when he's on the court, off the court. When you look at the roster and you're like, there's no one else on the team that had a great game, and yet you did everything. And for Kawhi, he had five assists last night or yesterday. That for him is a big number.
Yes,
like,
because
that's the one part of his game that has never been big on, is the playmaking, is the distributing. If he can average five assists, that adds a totally new element. But there's, because he is so willing to take those usually inefficient mid-range shots, but he makes them at such an efficient clip, there's nowhere to steer him towards. Watch how Harden is guarded. One of the reasons Harden efficiency takes a nosedive in the playoffs is teams are steering him to places he won't shoot. They're steering him to the mid-range where he just refuses to take those shots. Smart or otherwise, he won't do it. Kawhi is efficient from every quadrant of the court. That's how he's playing. And that doesn't even mention what he's doing defensively, which isn't, oh, wow, he's a really good defender. It's what it's been for the last few years. He is in the discussion for the best defender in the world, and that is so hard when you're not a rim protector. We know he's the best perimeter defender, but his perimeter defense might be so impactful, he might be a more impactful defender than Gobert or Draymond or the rim protectors out there. To me, none of the stuff about Kawhi right now is hyperbolic. He is playing better than anyone in the league right now.
Okay, but it certainly doesn't hurt that Joel Embiid isn't right? Joel Embiid once again was sick. Joel Embiid is breaking the team down. This other team can't seem to, the rest of the Sixers can't find a way to score or take control of the game when Joel Embiid isn't 100%. What is going on with this Philadelphia team, and should they be concerned about Joel Embiid?
You have to be concerned about Joel Embiid, because everything as far as their championship aspirations are around him being very, very good. But back to the Kawhi thing a little bit, I think that the opposition even makes us give Kawhi more credit, because they got a lot of guys that really should match up with Kawhi as far as size. Tobias, and we know him and Jimmy Butler. It's a personal thing. Like, Jimmy Butler should be able to do something with Kawhi besides Ben Simmons. And these guys, besides not being able to slow down Kawhi, they haven't been dependable enough in themselves to be able to help Philadelphia with Joel Embiid being out or injured or having gas or whatever he's going to have. Because I just think that if you're on Philadelphia, you need to understand Joel Embiid's a special player. But there are going to be some times he's not going to be healthy, a lot like Shaq. And will other players step up? And that's been the big problem for me with the 76ers.
Well, you said it. Joel Embiid's health makes him not being a dependable player right now. And the fact that you had game three on Friday and you didn't have that extra day of rest, whatever it was with the flu, his knees are the bigger problem to me. And when you're playing every other day, as opposed to getting the 72 hours of rest, that's where you're going to see the attrition and the weight with Embiid, the weight that he gained toward the end of the season. Yeah. It has caught up to him where he cannot be as effective on quote-unquote back-to-back type of situations. I think Jimmy Butler's played as well as he could possibly play in this series. But when Embiid and Simmons don't bring it, and Simmons is basically a complete liability, you have a problem.
Right. And I think that sometimes it's hard to be consistent with Jimmy Butler. Like, do I take over the offense? Because
absolutely,
we know we're going through Joel Embiid, but what offensive player is going to be there? Given the restraint, like, and given that now they're starting to put the ball in Jimmy Butler's hand more, yes, Jimmy Butler has been the best 76er.
Well, and when you talk about not the extra day of rest, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. They don't have an extra day of rest unless this thing gets to seven. So this is going to be the schedule for him moving forward. Off today, play tomorrow, off the next day, play Thursday. The other thing that's biting the Sixers here, listen, Ben Simmons has been bad this entire series. The only game you could even say was maybe a good game for him offensively was game one, and they got blown out in game one. So that didn't, it wasn't an impactful game for them. But the lack of a bench, you can't play Boban against the Raptors because they'll just pick and roll him off the court. That's why Boban played 0.4 seconds in yesterday's game. Came into guard inbounds and that's it. Greg Monroe was found money. Similar to what we were talking about Iman Shumpert. He was found money early in this series. Yesterday, Greg Monroe played 10 minutes. They were outscored by 17 points in those 10 minutes. Like, that is, those 10 minutes.
That's the game, the Greg Monroe you know.
That's the Greg Monroe that I knew when the Celtics picked him up last year. And our friend Chris Banks, like, Greg Monroe's going to be a factor. No, yeah, for the other team, scored. And so, right now, Philly, James Ennis was nice early in there in the series. He's their most reliable bench guy. He should be a ninth man. Mike Scott's clearly not healthy.
No.
So
mm-hmm.
now, if you have a game where Tobias is off and he's been off all series, and where Embiid is not healthy and fully functional, they were lucky to have it be a one-point game with a minute left before Kawhi ripped their hearts out. Like, it's tough for Philly because they could have stolen this game yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. And stole the series then.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, I say to be was worse. This Toronto team's looked like the same old Toronto team that we've been watching the past 3 years.
Except
they have Kawhi Leonard. The coach, Nick Nurse, I don't think has comported himself like a championship type of coach. I don't know if he's better than Dwayne Casey. I don't think he's been an upgrade in a 7-game situation. Maybe 82 games. But on the playoffs, I don't think he's comported himself that way. It looks like the same old Raptors, except they have Kawhi Leonard, who's playing like the best player in basketball.
It's the same old Raptors, except for the first time since they've been the Raptors in one of these series, they've got the best player on the court. The other team doesn't. The other team don't have Iverson. The other team don't have LeBron. The other team doesn't have the best guy on the court. They've got the best guy on the court. And that's the only reason it's even tied at 2 apiece.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.